From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, a state senator is arrested and more named as a public corruption probe continues. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the latest news, and we'll take a look at new legislation to permit facility dogs in the courtroom. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Nine more names of state senators and others potentially involved in corruption were made public this week when a judge ordered prosecutors in the case of convicted ex-Senator Shirley Huntley to make public the names of her colleagues that she had secretly recorded. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
According to a letter unsealed in federal court, former Senator Shirley Huntley, who was convicted of stealing $88,000 in government grants, recorded six of her Senate Democratic colleagues. She did so at the request of prosecutors in the summer of 2012 after she told investigators she had knowledge of what she believed to be public corruption. Huntley was instructed to invite the other senators to her home, and she recorded and photographed them on multiple occasions, according to the court document. Those senators include Malcolm Smith and John Sampson, who have already been charged with bribery and embezzlement. But she also recorded Senate Democratic colleagues Eric Adams, Jose Peralta, Ruth Hassel Thompson, and Velmanette Montgomery. Huntley also secretly recorded City Councilman Reuben Wills, who was once her chief of staff, as well as the former spokesman for the Senate Democrats, Curtis Taylor, and Melvin Lowe, who's identified in the court papers as a former political consultant and associate of State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. The letter released by the court says several of the names are subjects of ongoing criminal investigations. The Senate had already adjourned for the week by the time the document was released. Senate Democrats said in a statement that this is an extremely trying time in Albany and vowed that if charges are brought, the conference would take appropriate action. Governor Cuomo, who was holding a summit on tourism when the names were revealed, says it's a complicated, unpleasant time in state government.
It's obviously miserable. From my point of view, it is violative of the public trust. I'm sure it fuels the cynicism of the public.
The governor has proposed several anti-corruption bills in recent weeks. He says if the latest news and the ever-growing scandal won't persuade the legislature to adopt reform measures, he might do his own investigating, using powers under what's known as the Moreland Act to begin his own probe.
One way or the other, I want to make sure something's done at the end of session. I do have the ability to act unilaterally, but we'll see where we are as we get closer.
Cuomo concedes he's made no significant progress so far on his anti-corruption agenda, and he threw more cold water on a proposal to extend public financing of campaigns to state races. He says Republicans, who have partial control over the Senate, are philosophically opposed to public campaign financing. A coalition pressing for adoption of a statewide public financing system similar to the one in New York City argues that the latest bad news strengthens the case that systematic change is needed. David Donnelly with the Fair Elections Coalition says there's clearly an unquestionable crisis of confidence in state government.
These scandals have heightened public awareness that there's corruption in Albany and that something urgent has to be done to resolve it.
Several denials were issued Wednesday afternoon from those named in the court papers. Councilman Wills has released a statement saying he is not the focus of a criminal probe. Senator Peralta says he's confident that the authorities will find, if they have not already done so, that he's engaged in no wrongdoing whatsoever. And Senator Adams says he's never been contacted about any investigation. The Senate is not due back at the Capitol until May 20th. They had originally been scheduled to return May 13th for one day, then break for a Jewish holiday. But a spokesman for the Senate GOP says it's been decided that bringing senators back for a one-day session would be an unnecessary cost to taxpayers. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. My goodness, Alan, we started on Monday with the arrest of John Sampson in a probe, obstruction of justice charges for him. Then we are greeted as the week moves on to wiretap revelations coming out of Senator Shirley Huntley. She's the former state senator, Alan, now 74 years old, who admitted embezzling nearly $88,000 from a state-funded nonprofit she controlled. Trying to help her case, she agreed to wear a wire, and out come these names. No stranger to these names either. Senator John Sampson, Senator Malcolm Smith, Senator Velmont Montgomery, Senator Eric Adams, Senator Ruth Hassel Thompson, Senator Jose Peralta, also City Councilman Reuben Wills. This is, certainly hasn't stopped here. The probe continues. Albany is perhaps shaking at this moment?
I would say so. I would think that based on what we're seeing, that this thing is coming around to a lot of people. And while nobody has been convicted of doing anything wrong yet here, you have to understand that often when there's smoke, there's fire. Now, you know, I know Senator Velmont Montgomery from years ago. It's interesting. I had a fight with her because I had put a student in her office as an internship, and the student was Hispanic. She came in, saw the student, and said to the student, "Out, you're not black." Now, this made the front page of the New York Post and everything else you could possibly name. And we debated it on what was then a sort of national television hookup. It was WOR out of Secaucus, I believe, New Jersey. And we went in, and there they were, and we had to debate. And she said to me, "Are you calling me a racist?" And I said, "Well, Senator, what if it had been a black student who had been thrown out of a white office because they weren't white? What would you be saying then?" There was some audience there. They applauded, I have to say. And then she said, "Are you calling me a racist?" And I said, "Senator, if the shoe fits, wear it." Well, the point is, this was many years ago, and I've told that story too many times to too many people. And often some of her colleagues have said to me, "Alan, it's enough now. Leave her alone. You know, that was a long time ago. She's a good person. Now she's on the list."
Well, so what happens now, Alan? You have Governor Cuomo reacting to it, saying he has the power to unilaterally go for a Moreland Act commission. We heard David Soares, the district attorney in Albany, asking for more power to investigate. And he even said that, you know, these alphabet agencies that get set up have no real power or teeth. Does the governor have to do something now?
He does, because the governor came in and he said he's going to clean up Albany. And it's anything but clean. I'll tell you who's doing the cleaning up. It's the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It's the U.S. attorneys in Brooklyn and in Manhattan. They're doing it, and it's not the governor. So he's somewhat embarrassed by this. And so now he has to get out in front again. And one of the ways you do that is you start talking about a Moreland Act commission, which he has the right to appoint, to look into all of this. But I think he's a few dollars short and a mile late. I know that isn't quite the right way to say it. But it's the FBI, you know, who's doing all this. And the beauty of all of this is nobody knows where it ends. We know that we now have one state senator who, in order to get a lighter sentence, goes out and cooperates with the FBI and hands their colleagues in. But we know this is not the first time. There was an assemblyman named Castro who was doing the same thing. So this is the new tool du jour in the legislature. Now, you know, this is very bad for New York City because this is a huge part of the New York City delegation to the state Senate. And, you know, there will be those who cast aspersions and, you know, demographic groups and the rest of it. But in fact, greed is greed. And we have seen it among Republicans. We've seen it among Democrats. We've seen it in other states. We saw it in governor in Connecticut fall as a result of this. We've seen speakers in Massachusetts go to jail. You know, it all comes down to this, arrogance. And so you say to yourself, okay, wait a second. Are these guys really stupid? Don't they know what could happen to them? In one case, somebody sold out for $1,000. $1,000, can you believe that? And you say they're going to ruin their careers for $1,000? And then you say, well, what leads to the arrogance? What is it that makes them think they can get away with it? Well, one possible explanation, I don't know if it's true or not, is that somebody who thinks they can get away with it has gotten away with it before. And now they think, well, it's just one more time. But as I always say to my wife when she leaves her keys in the car, and I always argue with her about that, and she says, it's never been stolen before. And I always say, uh-huh. But you know what? It only takes once.
So now what happens with the power makeup of the New York State Senate, depending on what happens here in these investigations?
Well, this cannot be good for the state Senate. We do know that Senator Jeff Klein and his cohorts, who founded the Independent Democratic Conference, didn't like the makeup of the leadership of the state Senate. I know that the governor knew that there were people in the state Senate that were tainted. And he's been blamed by me, among others, for keeping the Republicans in office one way or the other. But I have to tell you, if I'm a voter around New York State, this certainly isn't going to help in any way. When you think for a moment about somebody casting a ballot, are they going to cast a ballot for a Democratic conference that was filled with potential crooks?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The Tonight Show is coming home to New York. The late-night program left for California in 1972, but the lure of state tax credits has proven irresistible to the NBC television network. The show is expected to generate more than $100 million in economic benefits for the Empire State, but not everyone supports the film tax credit. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Schenectady Film Commission head Don Rittner is responsible for bringing the motion picture production crew of Place Beyond the Pines to the area. The Focus Features film was shot and takes place in and around Schenectady. Rittner says the incentive to make movies upstate has grown and the tax credits help attract filmmakers.
What's great about the Capital District is that it's only a couple hours away from New York City, which is the main production. So even though the companies are located in the city, it doesn't take very long to get up here, you know, take a train or whatever, 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and they're putting a second rail in between Schenectady and Albany now, so that's going to cut the train time down probably by another half hour. There is talk that there's going to be a major motion picture production facility built here, that is, with state-of-the-art animation, 3D capabilities, and 5 sound stages, and someday that will be announced. So the Capital District is set to become, I like to call it East Hollywood.
Ray Legere is co-owner of the Schenectady-based Legere Group, which hosted production facilities for The Place Beyond the Pines.
We received more than $100,000 in income from having them here, which we would not have had they decided to go someplace else. So if you really want to use the economic growth numbers, it's between 4 and 7 times. So it's between $400,000 and $700,000 just on the money that I received.
Pumped back into the local economy.
Exactly. And that doesn't include the lunches, the hotels, the rentals.
Mike Feuerstein is a local filmmaker and educator. He explains that New York's film credits don't make much of a difference for the smaller independent film or documentary maker.
It's not that it's not helpful, because it's good to know it's there and it's a great incentive to step up your game and raise more money or do a larger project than you were planning on doing originally, which is always nice to see, you know, something coming out of the area that could potentially catch on. They did a number of films here, Virgin Alexander, Place Beyond the Pines, Winter of Frozen Dreams, and I think many of them got tax credits. There's a movie that's raising funds right now called Chickadee, and I did some principal photography on that for B-roll around the area in the winter. in order to secure tax credits because one of those contingencies was expiring and you had to shoot it by a certain time of the year.
Feuerstein sees tax credits as a bargaining chip in persuading producers to film upstate.
If I go to pitch a TV series, which I'm doing right now, and they say, well, where are you going to produce it? And I say, New York, because you get a tax credit, and here's what the tax credit is, and this is why it will benefit you. That's better than saying, oh, I don't know, maybe we'll shoot it in Vancouver, or maybe we'll shoot it in Chicago. I don't know. You know, where's the best place? You tell me. I can tell them, you know, if we shoot it here, this is the credit we get, and here's why you should help us.
Not everyone is welcoming movie and TV crews with open arms and wallets. Republican Assemblyman Kieran Michael Lawler, who represents portions of the Hudson Valley, introduced a bill at the end of April to restore $90 million in funding for not-for-profit programs for people with developmental disabilities, taking the money from the $420 million allotted in the budget for New York film production tax credits. Jimmy Fallon's New York City-based Tonight Show became something of a lightning rod among tax credit critics.
As of today, it's official. Starting in February, I'm going to be hosting the Tonight Show here on NBC.
Lawler outlines his opposition to tax credits.
We need across-the-board tax cuts, not tax cuts for privileged and favored groups that have lobbyists and close relationships with the powers that be in the state. Also, it's a 30-cent refundable tax credit based on the amount of production in the state of New York. In other words, for every dollar the production company spends in New York, we give them 30 cents. Often, the tax liability of the film production company is lower than the tax credit, in which case we cut them a check. We're actually cutting checks to Hollywood. One of the big beneficiaries of the Hollywood tax credit is NBC or their parent company, Comcast. Well, they're major donors to Cuomo. They've gotten $77 million in tax credits in the last couple of years. If you have to be a major donor to get some tax relief in New York State, well, the corner deli could use some tax relief. The local carpenter could use some tax relief. All businesses could use some tax relief. It should be across the board.
Lawler expects resistance from some downstate Democratic lawmakers whose districts are home to film and television productions.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Two New York State lawmakers from the Hudson Valley are behind legislation that would grant judges greater leeway to permit facility dogs in the courtroom in an effort to help certain witnesses through difficult testimony. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Freshman Democratic State Senator Terry Gibson is sponsoring Rosie's Law, named for the first assistance dog allowed by a New York court to accompany a witness during testimony. In this case, Rosie accompanied a girl known as Jessica during the proceedings in a child and sexual abuse case in Gibson's district. Here's Gibson.
Rosie's Law is a law that will, for the first time in New York State and in the country, allow judges to have the discretion to offer any victim that is under distress the opportunity to have a courthouse facility dog accompany them on the witness stand.
He says current law pertaining to facility dogs and witnesses is narrow in scope.
Basically, anyone who the judge believes is under a great deal of stress or who believes is vulnerable in such a way that they have a legitimate case to make that they cannot actually testify accurately without the assistance of a courthouse facility dog. And that's what's different about this current law, is it opens it up to basically anyone at the judge's discretion. Both the New York State law and other laws around the country have currently limited that scope of options.
Kathleen Murphy is executive director of the Center for the Prevention of Child Abuse of Dutchess County. Jessica's case came through her organization, and she is very much in favor of the law.
In this particular case, you know, other than the young girl, Rosie is a hero. And she really, you know, brought out the courage in this child to be able to testify. You know, she testified about four to 4 to 5 years of just being raped by her father. And she had to testify with him in the courtroom. And it was actually the first time that she had to face him since she, you know, was taken, you know, was gotten out of that situation. And she had to face him and testify and tell everyone what he had done with him sitting there staring at her.
She says the case is on appeal because the defense views the girl as having had an unfair advantage by having the dog at her side. The dog was in the witness box out of view of the jury.
And part of the healing process for these kids is to be able to talk about what happened, to be able to face their accuser. And to me, when she was able to do that with Rosie next to her, that's when her true healing process began.
Rosie, a golden retriever who died in November at age 13, was specially trained to sit for hours and clue into the stress of the witness and nudge her when she froze. Democratic Assemblyman Frank Scartatos, whose district includes the city of Poughkeepsie, is sponsoring the bill in his house. He says it's a common-sense law.
Testifying in court can be a really stressful and scary experience for just about anyone, especially for, you know, traumatized children or persons with disabilities. And so this is about building a kinder, compassionate, more effective judicial system that allows young victims and people with disabilities to do a better job on the stand.
Kellyanne Costellarier is executive director of Safe Homes of Orange County in Newburgh, a not-for-profit agency that provides domestic violence services to victims and their families. She had not yet heard of the proposed law, but says it sounds positive for victims.
In order to be participatory in the process, we need to be thinking outside the box and also being creative in our supports, so that in the process of getting justice, that victims are being able to heal as well. And that should be our responsibility as a community in the entire process.
Rosie's law would give judges the discretion to allow service dogs not only for kids, but for anyone on the defense or prosecution side deemed in need of such assistance. Since Rosie's death, Rosie's sister Ivy served as a facility dog, though she died last month. Ace, Rosie's grandson, named for an Iraq War veteran, is in training at Educated Canines Assisting with Disabilities and will be ready for service in a month or so.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1319. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.